It's episode 264 of the Kaiju Popcast. Welcome, one and all. I am your host, Chad O'Brien. And with me, we've got Marcelo Torrejon.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
And he's, what are you doing over there, Marcelo? What are you doing? You shivering?
Well,
shivering in the cold?
But sadly enough, I took your advice last week. I ran the heater. It warmed my apartment for 20 minutes while we were getting ready, and now I'm cold again.
That's right.
But I have myself some rather rich furnishings with this lambskin blanket here. So.
So cold you had to think about the word for blanket. Okay,
got it's it. Kind of bad, yeah.
Yeah, it is getting pretty cold. It's starting to dip below zero. Although I hear in the U.S. It's about to hit a real cold snap, meaning super freezing temperatures. And of course, that brings out the climate change deniers, as it always does. Hey, it's cold in America. That means global warming is a hoax. Yes.
So people don't understand the difference between temperature and climate, is what I'm getting from that.
You mean weather and climate, which, yes. Weather and climate. But, yeah, people also don't understand that cold fronts tend to, like, shift, and they can be pushed and moved, especially when warm fronts are pushing them. And anyway, we're here to talk about video games, and it's the night before New Year's Eve. So we're going to try to keep this relatively short so we can all go to bed early, and that way we can have all of our energy stored up for New Year's Eve. And what are you going to do, Marcelo? Any big plans?
Well, as the lonely guy, I'm going to break out the good whiskey, and I'm going to basically not remember anything that happens from, say, 11 p.m. till... You know, whenever whiskey stops working.
Whiskey never stops working.
Then I guess I'm just going to forget everything.
That's right. That's right. We're gonna sing Auld Lang Syne until the cows come home. But cows don't come home in Japan, unless you're in Kobe, I guess.
Or Hokkaido, I suppose.
Or Hokkaido, that's right. They've got those Holsteins up there. Hokkaido cows are not for beef. They're for milk. Everyone knows that. But... guess what, guys? We do have video games to talk about, or I guess one specific video game, because Marcelo, unlike the rest of us, does not have a fully fleshed out roster of top video games to share with all of us for this year. You have been playing video games, but I don't think a lot of them have come out this year per se. Like you played Ice and Verge and. Things like that, which is fine because you know you're still enjoying yourself. But that means that your game of the year or one single game of the year really stood out for you, and that's fine. What is it?
Well,
what's that game?
My one single game of the year, and probably I'm glad I played it. Is Nier Automata is quite possibly of the games I've played in my life that I've been happy to say that I played. It's definitely in my top 10.
I have never heard of it. What's this game?
It's a game in which you have your midlife crisis a couple of times, except when it just comes to your existence instead of a flashy car, I guess.
Well,
I don't know. We talked about this game last week.
Here's a hint, Marcelo. I was trying to give you an opening so you can describe what the game is for people who might not have heard last week's episode.
It it's would be a good way to describe this.
that's actually like as much as I'm laughing, that's a good way to begin this discussion. What's a good way to describe Nier?
I mean, like it on a superficial front, it's a lot like playing a Dynasty Warriors game. You fight a bunch of enemies. You have random loadouts, kind of RPG-ish, and you pick up chips to. I'm putting air quotes. None of you can see it, but I have air quotes up. Level up your character. Well, you do kind of level it up anyway, but still. Yeah, it's on a superficial front, you could just take it as a kind of a hack and slash beat 'em up kind of game. But I mean, kind of the as you play do the separate playthroughs. I've only done two of the playthroughs. Chad, you've definitely done all of them, but for the two, you kind of the second playthrough really kind of makes you think a bit more about what it is you're doing. And kind of one of the things I did kind of think about a lot, even through the first playthrough, was kind of this, it would constantly question what it is to be a human being, and like what really distinguishes us from, say, animals or from robots or androids or whatever. So in that sense, perhaps you could say it's an existential nightmare. I mean, that's kind of what they were going for, I think, mainly in that game. So
What's the story about?
Why do you do this to me? Why do you hate me this much?
Okay, fine. I'll give a quick rundown of the story, because it is interesting that you begin the description mostly with gameplay details, when I honestly think that the gameplay is one of the biggest faults with the game. Like,
How do you mean?
I found the combat to be extremely boring. For most.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Holy crap, yes, it was.
Many of the fights themselves were interesting in, like, who you were fighting or why, but the actual nitty-gritty of press button until thing dies was tedious. So like I said, I'd think it's kind of interesting that you would start there when the story is the game, is what
I
think.
Oh, certainly. But I feel like, when you look at a game like this, right, like, you're not, like, without giving too many spoilers away, I was like, well, what can I do to describe it initially, right? If you've never seen the game or know anything about it, like, most people want to know the genre first. Like, what am I getting myself into? And unfortunately, like, the genre totally...
Yeah, it's action-adventure.
It hoodwinks you, basically.
It's straight-up action-adventure. Like, I mean, it's sci-fi if you want to get into, like, what kind of action adventure is it, but yeah, it's action adventure. So the story itself is, again, we did talk about this last week, but just in case you missed that or you don't know what the game is, Nier Automata is a game about, humans have, there was an alien invasion of Earth, and basically all humans were forced to leave the planet and go to the moon, but in their stead, they created these androids to go down and fight for them, but the aliens seem to have retreated, so instead of fighting the aliens themselves, the androids fight robots, the machine life forms, as they're called. And you play the story through the eyes of one of those androids, the android serving the humans, that's 2B. But you have a partner in 9S who accompanies you through the whole thing, and also your pod. But, you go through, you fight the machine life forms, and, I mean, it's kind of predictable, but yes, you do find that there's more to being an android or a robot, than seems to meet the eye. And yes, so to go through the story, yeah, you do a lot of, as Marcelo said, you do a lot of Dynasty Warrior style combat. There's also a lot of 3D, like full 3D bullet hell stuff going on, in that different enemies will shoot all kinds of different bullet formations at you, whether you can dodge through them or not. And sometimes it switches up. It goes top down or it goes side scrolling 2D, or it goes into kind of a retro asteroid pixelish kind of thing. So the gameplay, this is another reason I thought it was interesting that you started with gameplay, is that the gameplay itself is the one that's the hardest to really pin down, because there's all kinds of things going on. But the story is great, and yeah. So why is it your game of the year? I'm actually surprised you call it game of the year after finishing the first two playthroughs.
I suppose for me, like it. Okay, so like I don't know if any of our listeners know, but I'm a self-proclaimed artist in the sense that I love drawing. I love, you know, looking at like how people handle character designs and things like that. That's kind of like a lot of the draw for any game I pick up as well. Like, yeah, if it has great reviews, that's fine. But if I find the animation to look terrible or something like that, I won't be as interested, right? But I really enjoyed seeing kind of the art style for 2B, 9S, and all of the... What's the other Android? Well, anyway.
2A. A,
yeah, thank you, 2A. And I just, like, I really like the style. I like the post-apocalyptic sci-fi feel to it as well. So for me, like, the big draw was that first, was, like, how it looked.
Mm.
And it's to me, like, for me, it's flawless. It's absolutely hits me on every one of my likes, you know? Like, the character designs are cool. The world is freaking amazing. Like, I'm still impressed playing through it. Like, yeah, it's just one of those games that, from a design standpoint, like an artistic design standpoint, just was absolutely perfect.
Hmm.
Not to mention the music is, as we mentioned last week, fantastic. The actual sound in the game, really great.
Yep.
It's just, if I had to pick a game, like, even if I had played, say, 20 or 30 games, and, you know, I watched a lot of games, of course, but I still think Nier Automata would have been my top choice, no matter what. So,
Well, certainly deserving. Certainly deserving. It won my number two slot, and it did win a number of awards, including our best sound, best music. Maybe the only award there. I could be wrong. Maybe not a number of awards, but it's up for a couple of awards today. But there's no news this week because basically everyone has shut down for the new year, and that's fine. We do have our ESRB quiz that we're going to go through, and then we'll just take out a couple of awards and we'll pop out. So this is going to be a relatively short show, I think, but we'll see how long it takes. So our ESRB quiz, we'll just get straight into that, is where I look up a game on the ESRB website, the ESRB being a ratings board that judges a game from being something that everyone can enjoy all the way up to a game that's for adults only because it's too mature. And on their website, they have a full listing of games and why they deserve certain ratings. And so I take those descriptions, chop them up into four bits. So these go 4, 3, 2, 1. Four is, it will give you 4 points if you get it right, but it is the most general hint, so it's kind of hard to guess what the game is from that alone. All the way down to hint, the last hint, which is worth 1 point, but it is the most specific hint, kind of hard to not guess what the game is. Well, yeah, sometimes we have that, but, yeah. All right, so, this game, the only hint I give before our hints, the hint before the hints, is that this game came out in 2006. Okay. The first hint, which is worth 4 points, enemies generally burst into clouds when defeated. Some enemies split in half and emit stylized spurts of blood. A handful of still images depict animals surrounded by large red bloodstains.
Hmm.
2006.
Okay, so blood splurts, stylized blood splurts, surrounded by animals.
No, the other way around.
Oh, sorry.
Still images depict animals surrounded by large red blood stains.
Oh,
Not blood stains surrounded by animals.
I was like, that doesn't make as much sense, but I'll go with it.
Don't know, maybe those animals are thirsty. Gotta get liquids from somewhere.
So they're doing was it Mountain Dew Red?
Oh, Mountain Dew Code Red? I was
Yeah,
thinking
yeah.
more of the oh, I forget what those forest creatures are called from South Park, but yeah.
I have no idea. This doesn't sound like anything I've ever played.
Well, I mean, you can always pass.
I'll pass on 0.4. Okay.
All right, so we go to our 3-point hint, which is from a third person perspective. Players use swords and other melee devices, plus magic attacks, to defeat human-like enemies in melee-style combat.
Rygar? They're like the remake?
Rygar the Remake is a guess, and it's wrong. So we move on
Damn
to
it.
our 2-point hint. 2-point hint. A few
Okay.
cutscenes depict characters drinking from jugs of sake or smoking pipes. Let's see. Oh. The one level contains a dog enemy that uses feces or urine to attack opponents, and one sequence depicts a character using a sword to decapitate the heads of a snake-like monster.
Sounds like Ninja Gaiden.
Ninja Gaiden is a guess, and it's wrong. So we move on to our last one.
Fuck!
It's
Sounded like Ninja Gaiden, I swear.
Only a game. It's only a game, Marcella. It's only a game about games. But
Like even worse.
yeah, so we go on to our 1-point hint, our last hint. This is an action adventure game in which players assume the role of a mythical dog that attempts to restore peace to the world. Oh, Marcella,
Huh?
you're hurting me here. You're hurting me here.
I'm sorry, man. That hit doesn't actually help at all.
Oh man, I'm sure the internet peoples out there are screaming their lungs off.
Okay, what is it?
The answer is Okami. Okami.
Oh, God dang it. Okay.
PS2 game released in 2006, developed by Clover Studio, which is now gone, absorbed by Capcom. And yeah, it was a Hideki Kamiya game. Yeah, he is now the director for Platinum Games. But yeah, Okami, where you play Amaterasu, a dog who is like the vessel for the wolf god Amaterasu, and uses melee weapons and brush magic to defeat enemies as you restore peace to Japan.
Wow, I feel even worse knowing that now. Jeez.
Have you ever played Okami?
I have not, but the character Amaterasu from
Yeah.
Okami shows up in a game
Marvel
I
vs.
played the living
Capcom.
heck out of.
Yep.
Yep. And now I'm like, oh, I know what that character's from too.
Yep. Well, Okami
Oh.
has also had like 8 million different re-releases. It originally came
There's
out
that.
on PlayStation 2, then it came out on Wii, and it's on PC as well, and just this week got a or last week, excuse me, last week got a re-release for the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. It's an amazing game, contains some of the best music ever, and is a fantastic look, albeit stylized, at a lot of Japanese history. So there are characters like there's Jiraiya and Isumboshi, and it does a lot of the old mythology stuff, and it's the art style itself is done in the watercolor brush strokes that are very kind of what you imagine when you think of Japanese art, if not ukiyo-e than this. But yeah, so there, that's that game. It's an amazing game, and Marcelo gets 0 points.
Oh.
Zero
Wait,
points.
I've already given you my gamer card. What do I have to give up next?
Your credit card, I guess, so that I can use it to buy you a copy of Okami.
That sounds reasonable, and that's not going to happen, but it does sound reasonable.
All right, so, yeah, if you are a fan of Zelda games, then Okami is another game for you. Although, I will say, be prepared for just an insane amount of text reading to start, at the very least. If I remember right, I actually haven't loaded up my new copy of the re-release, but if I remember right, it's something like 15 minutes before you can even control your character for the first time. Yeah, but which would not be so bad if they had actual voice dialogue, but it's all fake speech. Yeah, 15 minutes.
Oh, it's Charlie Brown's teacher speech.
Okay. I would actually prefer wah 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 to the little high pitched. But yeah, that's a thing. All right, so we've got that out of the way, and we're going to move on to our mini game awards. So we've given out a number of these. Last week we gave out a whole lot. We gave the old game award, that's best game from before 2017, to Axiom Verge over Stardew Valley. The Piles Award for Handheld Game That Sucks You In went to Zelda Breath of the Wild over Xenoblade Chronicles 2. The Best Worst Game, which is a game that's badly produced but you still enjoy it, went to Star Trek Bridge Crew over Get Even. Best Sound went to Nier Automata over Breath of the Wild. Best Combat went to Nioh over Breath of the Wild. What the I Don't Even Award for the Weirdest or Creepiest Thing in a Video Game went to Wolfenstein and the New Body Sequence over Nier Automata's Birth of Adam and Eve. And both of those games will show up again this week. Last one was Best Looking, which went to Cuphead over Breath of the Wild. And our awards this week, how many do we have? Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6... Seven awards to give out today, and then we're done for the year, and we're out. We're shutting the doors and closing all the windows, and make sure you lock the door on your way out, Marcel. Please, we don't want our offices broken into over the holidays, or the holiday. There's only one left. Right. So we have starting up our list is worst best game. So last week we had the Best Worst Game, which, again, is a game that doesn't look all that great. It's not the highest quality, but you still enjoy it. This is the Worst Best Game, which has high production values. It looks fantastic, or at least really good, but, it has a soulless, broken design. So something about it just is off. So last year this went to No Man's Sky. And if that sounds familiar, it's because last year it also won the Best Worst Game. in a rare double whammy, it both looked bad and was fun to play, but looked good and was not fun to play. Yes.
You guys are just like paradoxes and paradoxes.
Right? Well, I mean, really, if you've ever played No Man's Sky, the vanilla original release, then you would understand. So anyway, our games this year, again, worst best game, high production values but soulless or broken design. Our nominees are The Surge, Animal Crossing Pocket Camp, The Mummy Demastered, or Mass Effect Andromeda. So these are all mine, but Marcelo, if you want to toss anything in there,
I tossed in MVCI.
Okay.
Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite. That game is, well, yeah, bad.
Well, we'll be talking about it more in just a moment. Infinite. Anything else?
Let's see what else was really disappointing.
How about that Fate game? Were you a fan of that?
Yeah, like, yeah, it definitely goes in this topic for
Yeah,
sure. I put that in.
almost any warrior style game really kind of
Yeah, definitely.
belongs in
I put
here.
the Fate game in there too. Yeah,
So
those
Fate
are my
is
two.
still
I'd say that I'd put in for this one.
all right. So let's talk about these. The Surge, I honestly forget the name of the company that made it. I'm actually gonna look this up right now. But it was the same company that made another Souls clone, which was Lords of the Fallen. And Lords of the Fallen was not too well received. I think it was mediocre. Not terrible, but just mediocre. Which is kind of what this game is, this award is about. N they aren't necessarily just terrible games. They're just mediocre, but look good. Anyway, so The Surge was teased for quite a while, and it did seem interesting because it was going to be more of a sci-fi version of Dark Souls. There were promises of robots and not like space or anything like that, but you were going to be in the future and it would have robots and all kinds of things like that. And one of the interesting early mechanics they talked about was the ability to target individual body parts on your enemies, knock them off or chop them off, and add them to your own like exoskeleton robot body, which seemed really cool. But then the game came out, and yes, it's robot Dark Souls, but the combat is incredibly slow. And when you chop off body parts, most of them tend to be kind of the same. There are like three different versions: a fast version, a medium version, and a heavy version, basically. And so you can make a heavy suit or a medium suit or a light suit, or you can kind of mix and match so you can have a heavy arm and light arm. But at the same time, like there's no real loot system or anything. It's just, okay, now I have a heavy arm, and like then at that point, it's why even bother aiming for body parts after that kind of thing. And yeah, it's also punishing to an extreme degree, in a way that like even as a Souls fan, this just felt cheap. And Dark Souls was always cheap, but this was just like, okay, every enemy can kill you in just a couple of hits, and sometimes it's not a matter of knowing how to fight. It was just you would die, and it was boring. So yeah, that's that. We also had Animal Crossing Pocket Camp. Here's one that everyone was looking forward to ever since Nintendo said they were going to put Animal Crossing on the phones. This Animal Crossing on the phone also seemed like something that would be the most possible. So the other things they said they were going to put on were Mario, and they came out with Mario Run, and that was meh. Then they put out Fire Emblem Heroes, which I really like, but on the whole is not generally super well received. It's again meh, but Animal Crossing, people are like, okay, yeah, here is something that's very possible. Like, you can create your own little worlds and have all kinds of fun, and you can do the social media stuff so you can share your world. And but then the Nintendo Direct came out discussing details about what you would get with Pocket Camp, and that's when enthusiasm just kind of crashed because you don't get a custom world. You get a custom campsite, which is just like a tiny, tiny, tiny little area. And you can build in there, and that's about it. And you can't, there's no grid system or any kind of world where like you can put down flowers or trees or anything wherever you want. You can visit other areas that already have trees, but you can't do anything with them. You can't chop them down and plant another tree somewhere, and there's no fruit trading, so every player has access to like every kind of fruit, whether it be the coconuts or the cherries or whatever. Whereas fruit trading was kind of big in the older game series. And yeah, it just seems like, basically they boiled down a lot of what was really fun about Animal Crossing, which is that, you know, it's your place, and all that's left is a bunch of fetch quests from all these characters who are like, well, you know, I'd love to visit your camp, but only if you have these five specific furniture items already built. It's like, oh, wait, really? I have to build stuff for you just so you will come to my camp. That's just
That sounds freaking awful, dude.
Yeah, especially when you meet characters who are like, oh, I only like super cutie stuff, and I hope you have a lot of bunnies and fluffies at your camp that is like already themed around sports, and it's like, no, I'd rather not, you know? But yeah, so I stopped playing a long time ago. But that's Animal Crossing. The Mummy Demastered, I think we did talk about this a while ago when we were talking about our games we played. This is a game by WayForward. It seemed really interesting because it's a WayForward game, and they are known for their Shantae series, and it was kind of a flip of the licensed game. So most licensed games tend to come up with like really bad games that come out with them. See your Spider-Mans or whatever other movies you can think of. But this one was a lot different because they went with like a 2D Metroidvania style. But the problem is like there's just a plethora of enemies who can cheap shot you for no reason because they're just all over the stage and the stages are preloaded when you come in. So that means the enemies are moving around even though you can't see them, which means if you do a blind jump, you could land on them and that will hurt you more. And the bosses are extreme bullet sinks and yeah, so it's not a lot of fun. Mass Effect Andromeda, I don't think anyone needs to make a case for this game because wow, that was
Yeah, that was something.
yeah,
That was.
that was something. So, Mass Effect spin-off, they go to an entire new galaxy and they're supposed to discover new life and a new place to stay for all of the current species from the Mass Effect series. But the problem is that means you're going to a new galaxy and yet you had no new species to interact with. You had one new species to interact with. And they weren't that interesting. I forgot their names already. But yeah, and then you go around and like you do a bunch of pointless quests, a bunch of pointless quests, and yeah, it was just a very terrible game. And it basically killed the franchise, at least for now, because they have put that entire franchise on an indefinite hold at the moment, over at EA. So, next up we have your entries, Marcelo.
All right, so MVCI, that is like we ha those of us in the fighting com game community, we had a lot of hope for this game. I mean, UMVC3 is an amazing game to watch, even now. Like, the game is old, but oh man, the matches are great. UMVCI is not fun to watch. So, as a spectator, it looks bad. Is relatively boring. As someone who played it, like, I haven't actually played it, but I've talked to a few of my friends who have. They're all really disappointed with how stodgy and just. They say it feels clunky. Like, that would be the best way to describe it. For those people, I'm sure one person here out there who follows fighting games, a lot of people know how, like, the initial character designs for, say, Captain America, Chun-Li, I mean, pretty much most of the characters just looked really janky Like, it's just really bad. Chun-Li looked like if you took a Chinese woman's face and you took a frying pan and you hit her in the face. That's kind of what Chun-Li looked like. It was not good. Not good. Yeah, it's just all around a disappointing game. They did clean up the graphics, which is nice. It's still a disappointing game. It's just, as the fighter goes, it has that kind of worst sin. Like, when you have terrible fighting games, like, say, your Time Killers and things like that, they're kind of fun because they're so bad. But MVCI commits, like, the cardinal sin of just being boring. Like, it's not necessarily a bad game. It's not necessarily a good game. It's just very, boring. It's, considering how much we hoped it would be fun, it's just, that's a MVCI for you.
Mm.
Fate, Extella, which is another one of the Fate games that, it's a visual novel and Dynasty Warriors. I love me some visual novels. I love me the Fate universe. I do not love me, like, Dynasty Warriors already is, like, a pretty simplistic hack and slash, right? Like, it's very, I'm super ultra powerful and I kill a bunch of enemies. Sometimes I fight a boss.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically it, right? Fate. I'm more than super powerful. There's very few ways I can die. And, it's either a time trial. Yeah, that's it. That's, like, the only challenge in the game is a time trial. Like, you must make sure you secure these points before you get overwhelmed. Yay! It's too generous. Even on the hard difficulty levels, it's like, yeah, this is a soulless game. Like, play it for the visual novel part. Don't play it for the gameplay, because, oh man, you're going to be disappointed.
Mm.
Yeah. That's all it for me.
All right, well, so I'm kind of guilty of this sin as well, but the problem with basically what both you and I kind of did is that we kind of leaked this into our next discussion, which is Letdown of the Year.
No,
I mean these two are pretty closely linked, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the worst best game will necessarily be the letdown of the year. So again, the worst best game is supposed to actually look pretty good, but play pretty poorly. For example, The Search actually really does look nice. Like you go to, you go to all kinds of different, robotic facilities, and there's, of course there's factories and there's underground basements, and there's like this little desert area with where you crash landed your ship, and, all kinds of, stuff like that. And it does look good and sounds good and stuff like that. And like, it is smooth, but yeah, it's just, boring to play. Whereas, for example, with Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite, like you were saying, that it just doesn't look good, or the character models don't look good.
I would say, like I said at the beginning, when it was first revealed, like even for like a near to release beta testing, it looked, some characters looked really amazing, and other characters looked really bad. They did clean that up, so it looked really pretty.
Mm.
Just boring, horrifically boring.
Okay. I'm gonna say, oh man, these are all hard. I'm gonna make a strong push for The Surge to get this, just because it did have a legacy, and like, never mind.
This is really tough, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But
I kind of want to push for your vote of Andromeda, because
yeah, I was about to say, yeah. Andromeda, I'm being silly, because Andromeda is such the clear, like, far and away candidate that like I just kind of pushed it out of my mind. And that's why I started talking about the Surge. Yeah, I think everyone agrees with Mass Effect Andromeda.
I definitely would push
think,
for that too.
I think the world agrees that so the issue becomes number two. And there again, I'm gonna say
either
the Surge, maybe Fate Extella. I haven't actually seen the game in play, but I mean, just again, it's a Warriors type game, which means I already know what the gameplay is, and yeah, that is always soulless.
I haven't seen Surge, but like when you described it, I was like, oh, I'm getting into this. This sounds really cool, getting to like grab body parts, and then you're like, but it plays like it's just boring and not great. I'm like, oh. I felt disappointed immediately. Like, I was like, I don't want to play this anymore now.
Okay. All right, then let's give it to the Surge.
I think that's fair, yeah.
All right. So, the worst best game, high production values, and soulless broken design goes to Mass Effect Andromeda over the Surge. And now
we're just rocking the boat this year, aren't we?
Now let's go to Letdown of the Year, which again we've kind of covered a lot of this already. Chris put on here Double Dragon 4 we've talked about this earlier with just the straight up worst game. Double Dragon 4, it plays bad, it looks bad, it goes at like half speed, and it's not good. And then we also have Animal Crossing Pocket Camp, Mass Effect Andromeda, and and for you, Marcelo, I put on Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite.
Yep, that's going in for me for sure. That is
now the thing about this award is, for example, I couldn't put the Mummy Demastered on here because there's it has to kind of go off of expectation. So
right,
nobody expected the Mummy Demastered, and then it came out and it looks good, but it played poorly. So it fits in with worst best game, but it does not fit in with the letdown. For that reason, I'm gonna kind of say Double Dragon 4 doesn't really belong in this category because Double Dragon 3 wasn't good, and like Double Dragon hasn't had a good game in a long time.
Neo's pretty decent. Double Dragon Neo's not bad.
It's not bad, but I don't think anyone was expecting this to be like a return of Double Dragon.
Well, like, what would a return of Double Dragon be? Hey, another
yeah.
Beat 'em up.
Yeah.
Yay!
Yeah. So again,
if it was like a return of Streets of Rage, man, I would have been like nuts for it. But
sure.
Double Dragon, really? Yeah.
So for that reason, I'm gonna say that doesn't really go that way. But Animal Crossing Pocket Camp, Mass Effect Andromeda,
that does sound pretty disappointing, man. Holy
and Marvel
crap.
Vs. Capcom. I don't think we even need to discuss this before giving Mass Effect Andromeda giving the big gold there for letdown of the year.
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty fair, man.
So then we come down to Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite versus Animal Crossing Pocket Camp. Both of these games are games that people have been waiting for a long time. Well, Animal Crossing Pocket Camp, not so much. People wanted a new... they really want to switch Animal Crossing, obviously, but they were just looking for any new Animal Crossing title after New Leaf. Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite, obviously people have been waiting since Marvel vs. Capcom 3, or 3 Ultimate, 3.
Yep.
Yeah.
Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3. There we go. That's
there you go. So they've been waiting since that came out, which was, I don't know, whenever, what, 10 years? No, can't be that
Let's
long.
See, it came out when I first moved to Japan.
Mm.
So, 8 years ago?
8 years.
Holy
okay.
Shit. That is a long time.
Yeah.
I just realized it, like, yeesh.
So I forget when New Leaf comes out too. New Leaf was 2012, so 5 years. But yeah, of course, like the fighting game community was riled up when they heard that there's a new Marvel vs. Capcom and then this came out, and like what was it? 20 of the 28 fighters were already on the roster, like not new.
Not only that, like it's mainly just like Marvel properties. And like they're characters no one really gives a crap about. Like for people who play like Marvel vs. Capcom, man, there are staple characters that should be in every one of these. Wolverine needs to be in this game. Magneto needs to be in this game. Dr. Freaking Doom needs to be in this game. I mean,
Well,
like,
like
those are
I
like those are mainstays, right? Like from the Capcom side, we kind of got what we wanted, but at the same time, we're just kind of like, well, yeah, we kind of expected it anyway.
Well, I completely agree with that. The whole problem is that they were making this game while Marvel, this is before Marvel finally obtained the rights to the Fantastic Four and the X-Men from Fox. And that was during a time when Marvel Publishing was actually kind of pushing the X-Men away. Like they were trying to focus on the Inhumans, because Fox was making lots of money off the X-Men, and they didn't really like that. They wanted their property back, and Fox was had a had an iron grip on it. So, they basically said, "Okay, well, if we can't make the movies, then we'll try to push them out of the comics so that they aren't popular anymore, and then maybe Fox will sell them."
See Fantastic Four.
And sure enough, that kind of happened. So now we have now m we now Marvel has the rights back to all of the X-Men and Fantastic Four, but it's kind of too late now, unless they're gonna add in Wolverine and Doctor Doom later. But the problem there is, I hear that each character is what, like a $10 DLC pack?
Dude, it's pretty ridiculous. I think it's like 5 or 10. I can't remember, but like, yeah, no, I'm not spending $60 for some DLC characters that, on the whole, are pretty underwhelming. Like, they're not fun to play.
So
So,
I think I'm okay with giving that second place.
All right, thanks, man. But not really. You know what I mean? Just it's.
Okay, so we move on. We move on to the best moment in video games. So this is obviously a very subjective award, and it also comes with a whole bunch of spoilers. A whole
Uh-oh.
bunch. So if you haven't played any specific video games this year, then you might wanna skip ahead. We're gonna be talking about let me make sure each of these games is separated. Okay, there are no duplicates. All right. So all of these were my entries, but you're welcome to add anything you want, Marcelo.
I have a near moment that kind of cuts back to last week as well, so if you don't mind me putting in a near moment.
Okay, we'll put that in just a bit. First off, I said the audition scene in Wolfenstein 2. Romeo's and Juliet's in Nier
Sorry. That's a great moment though. Oh my goodness.
The opera boss in Mario plus Rabbids, the darker side of the moon in Super Mario Odyssey, Eventide Island in Zelda Breath of the Wild, and Breaking the Illusion in Prey. So you said you wanted to add something from Nier, let's see.
Actually, the what, WTF moment, or the, what the, oh my, that one. For me, I mentioned the circus scene. That's also still, that's actually one of my favorite moments from that game as well. So, just when you first kind of come across it, and like, it's that parade of robots coming through the center of the road, and you're just like, I'm not dead yet. That's good. That's like possibly one of my favorite moments from here.
Okay, so let's go through these one at a time. Unless you had anything else you wanted to add.
That's the only one I've got for you.
Okay. So, the audition scene in Wolfenstein 2. This is Yeah, again, these are going to be major spoilers, so please skip ahead if you don't want to be spoiled, or follow along in the journey. So, Wolfenstein 2 is full of just amazing moments. It won our best WTF moment from last week, for a certain incident, but this time, this actually comes after that moment. You are trying to infiltrate a Nazi base on Venus. And yes,
Whoa, whoa.
you heard
What,
me.
what?
On Venus, yes. Yeah, so
Nazis in space.
that's right,
Why
Nazis
not?
in space. Yes. So you need to go to this base on Venus, but it's obviously very hard to get to Venus because there's going to be all sorts of security. And so you need a way to get in there and bypass that. So you figure out that there's going to be this movie made about the capture of B.J. Blazkowicz, which is the main character. And the WTF moment from last week kind of explains why they would make a movie about that. But anyway, the Germans are making this movie, and they mention on the television that there's going to be a specific actor who's trying out for the role, and you and your crew decide, well, we're just gonna kidnap this actor and send the actual B.J. Blazkowicz to take his place. So yeah, the whole thing begins with you kidnapping the guy. It's just in a cutscene. It's not even gameplay. You kidnap the guy and you put him in the back of your car. You're driving along while you're gluing on a mustache that looks like his. And at one point, your wife, says, "What should we do with him?" Referring to the actor squirming in the back seat while he's tied up. And BJ says, "Oh man, I don't know. Hey, buddy, you a Nazi?" And the guy just he's completely gagged up, but he shakes his head as best as he can, and BJ's just like, "Ah, can't even tell anymore." Which is totally a comment on modern society, obviously. But anyway, he then apparently gets into a ship that goes off to Venus, goes in, and yeah, there are three actors, including no, there are three actors plus yourself, and it's I bring that up because one of the actors, this is great. It's actually a stand-in for Ronald Reagan. Yeah, at some point the actors are, just mingling with each other, and he goes like, "Oh, hi, is your name's what? Robert?" And he goes, "No, Ronald." And if you go to that guy's chair, on the back, all the names are written out, and that guy has a coat kind of covering his name, but you can see GAN, the last three letters of his name. So Ronald and GAN Reagan. There you go. And anyway, so you get all these characters together, and the director comes out and she introduces herself as Helena, which is the real name of Leni Riefenstahl, who directed Triumph of the Will. And then she tells you that you're going to be playing this part, and here are your lines that you're going to read for the audition. And BJ, not being an actor, says, "How am I ever going to do this?" And he ends up writing the lines on his hands. Just as the door opens up and in walks Adolf Hitler. Very advanced in age at this point. He's very decrepit, but the depiction of Adolf Hitler is absolutely amazing. Now Hitler as a doting old fool is nothing new in entertainment portrayals, but the level they took it to, it was both entertaining but also just downright terrifying at some point. Like, it's one of those things where the man very obviously deserves none of the respect that people are giving him, but they are giving it to him out of basically sheer habit at this point. So he kind of wanders around and putters about with a little stuttering step, and he eats a grape and almost chokes on it, but then he starts talking to the people, and he's like, "None of you stupid actors could ever understand any of my greatness. Have you all read my books?" And one actor says, "Of course, mein Führer, even my children have read it." And then another person stands up and he goes, "Oh yeah, I really loved it, Mr. Hitler. Super good." And this was the Ronald Reagan stand-in, by the way. Super good. And then Hitler turns to him and he says, "Mr. Hitler, and when you address me, you are supposed to say, 'Mein Führer.' What are you, some kind of Jew?" And Reagan says, "No, sir, I'm from Arizona." Whereupon Hitler just shoots him straight in the face. So it's this terrifying menace. And then immediately after that, he pulls down the I don't know if there's a specific name for it, but the bucket where you normally keep champagne, the ice bucket. He puts that on the floor and he just starts pissing into it while he's still talking to you. This goes on for a little bit. At one point, Hitler vomits on the floor, which is, that was a little bit stupid. I don't see why they put that in, but, he starts feeling, he loses his sense of place for a moment, and he puts his head against, Helena's chest, starts going like, "Mutti, Mutti," the mother in German. He asks each of the actors to read out some of the lines, and this is great. He comes up to you first and he says, "Okay, read with Helena." And I forget the specific line, but she's like, "Oh my God, you terrifying American, what are you going to do to me?" And the line is, "I will rape and murder you," but like you look at your hand and it's all smudged out, you can't read it anymore. This is great because it becomes player interaction. You can select from four different choices. One of them is, of course, "I will rape and murder you," but like another one is, "I will cake and butter you." If you select the wrong line or the right line too, he's not an actor, so he just does the worst delivery. So like you choose cake and butter and kind of looks at his hand for a moment. Looks at the camera as if he's looking at you, like, "What are you doing, buddy?" And then, like, looks back at his hand, says, I will cake and butter you." Whereupon Hitler shoots you in the face for doing a bad reading. But again, even if you choose the right one, he's just like, I will rape and murder you." Then after the bad reading and they go into this physical portion where you have to fight a guard. You have to show off your physical prowess. So the theater trained actor goes in, he gets his nose broken and he starts crying about it because he didn't think they were gonna get rough with him, and Hitler shoots him to death, and then they leave it up to you. You go into the cage with the guard, you take him out, you shoot him 1800 goddamn times, beat him like you take his own rifle and you beat him like an axe with it, or a maul, I guess. Turn around and say, "Is that what you want, you Nazis?" And then Hitler says, "Ah, yes, that's the man." I also did forget to mention that when you're called to the cage to do your physical acting, then Hitler is at this point, he's kind of lying on the ground because he feels a little bit out of it. He's lying on the ground and just watching from the side. You can actually just walk over and kick him in the face. I don't know if it directly kills him, but then every guard in the room will shoot you. So that's the audition. That was a long scene. That was a long description, I know, but
That is fantastic, is what you mean.
yeah. Right. So, I'm gonna try to cut through that just had to be described in full. So, the other scenes I'm gonna try to cut down. Romeo's and Juliet's in Nier Automata. So, this kind, well, you can talk about yours first because yours comes before that.
Okay. So for mine, it's you kind of come across this abandoned amusement park, I guess would be the best. It's like Disney, if Disney was run by homicidal robots, but they're nice now. Which up until this point is not the norm. And so, like my first instinct was as I saw the parade of death bots, I was like, well, I probably should have grinded a bit more before coming here. Crap. But nope, they come up, they're happy as can be. As happy as a robot can be, I suppose.
They throw confetti.
And yeah, hey. Obviously, if you're throwing confetti, you're happy. That's how it works.
That's how it works, yeah.
And the music is pretty fantastic, I have to admit. I absolutely love the music in the amusement park.
Yep.
Yeah, it's such a in a game that already is quite surreal, and how it's already portrayed the robots up until this point. Like you have some inklings that perhaps they're their image of them just being, murder bots is a little off. Really, it gets kind of rammed home in this particular area, and certainly, I felt kind of in awe of like the design idea behind it, right? Like you just come off this huge boss battle, you run into this area, you're like, oh God, time to kill people, and then nope, you get to kind of a you get to be like a kid in Mecha Disney. I absolutely love the scene, so.
Okay, so the next part is the Romeos and Juliets, which I put in. So this comes after yours, but in the same area. It's in the amusement park. You eventually come to this auditorium style thing where you have to go through a boss fight, which is also amazing. It's a great boss fight. But
Yep.
then if you come to that same area later, I forget what exactly triggers it or when, but you go there.
Isn't it after you go to that one you go back or you go to the wood area
Maybe,
place?
I don't know. But anyway, so you go to this, you go back, you go in that same area, and they're having a stage play. They're having a, it's called Romeos and Juliets, and the curtain opens up, and it says, this one robot skitters out, and it says, Juliet won, and she says, Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo? And then Romeo one runs out, and I forget exactly what he says. Like I think he says like Juliet, Juliet, wherefore art thou, Juliet? Maybe. But then another robot comes out, and it says Juliet two, and she says, I don't know which one of you is Romeo. And then another Romeo comes out and says, I couldn't tell you either. And then Juliet comes out and says, then I guess I'll have to call your numbers. And Romeo 3 comes out and he says, then I'll take your life. And they start fighting and like they get rid of all the Shakespearean speech and say like, well, it's kind of a mixture of contemporary speech and, it's that fake Shakespeare thing. Like, I'll kick thine ass and, pisseth off. But
It's oh my God, that is a fantastic scene.
yeah,
Oh
the
dear Lord.
robots just keep killing each other until there's one left, and he says, oh, woe is me. I suppose I'll have to join my brethren, and ex like kind of self explodes. And then the receptionist walks out and says, well, I guess that concludes our performance of Romeo's and Juliet's. If you'd like to have your ticket stamped this way, please. Yeah, so that's Romeo's and Juliet's. Next is the opera boss in Mario plus Rabbids. You have a number of different worlds, and one of them is like this horror, graveyard style world, and you're told to find, excuse me, you're eventually led to this boss where, he comes out and he looks like, an opera singer. He's big and bulgy and he's got this mustache and music starts playing and, he starts to sing, and at first, I was kind of skeptical because he sounded like a rabid style singer. He started saying the bois. Bwa, 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 which is what the rabbits do. They say bwa. And I was like, oh, okay. But then he starts actually singing. And I forget all the lyrics. I can't remember them, but he says something about like, how do you go, Mario, I hate you so much, but how do you go through all those pipes despite your pear-shaped body? And I love playing Mario Kart, but every time I get in first, here comes the spiny shell. And yeah, like it's actually pretty good. Like the vocals are done really nicely, and yeah, it's a fun experience. And he adds more lines on as you continue beating him up. And so that's that. Next up on our list, we have the Darker Side of the Moon from Super Mario Odyssey. So when you complete the game and you get all the credits and you're happy and you beat Bowser and it's a glorious, glorious march to the credits, then you can actually unlock even further worlds. So I'm not gonna spoil everything, I guess, but there's one world you can get to at 250 and another you can get to at 500 power moons. Have you played any Super Mario Odyssey yet, Marcelo?
No, not yet.
Okay. Well, anyway, so you get 500 power moons and you can unlock a world called the Darker Side of the Moon. And there's not really much to explore there, not a lot of walking space or anything. There's a couple, but the big thing you're supposed to be doing there is this kind of final challenge. It's a run of all sorts of things you've done in the game up to that point, really. Basically everything you've done in the game. So not only is it a test of your jumping skills as Mario, like you have to do a lot of different platforming, whether it be leaping across poles or moving platforms, things like that, but also your ability to use Cappy to either possess the right creatures and use their skills to the best ability, or just use Cappy to actually clear out enemies. So a lot of it is very difficult. So it's a real test of all the skill. I will say, like, it's only slightly disappointing that that's really the only super test of skill in the game. Like a lot, I think we've talked about this before, but the game is actually incredibly easy, to get almost everything. It's not a big challenge. Maybe the little races in the individual worlds are difficult, but that's about it. So anyway, the final challenge here, it took me maybe 30 different tries to finally get all the way to the end, and you have to do it all in one shot. There's no checkpoints along the way. But then, yeah, you do it. It's great, and there's a special little surprise at the end, which I won't spoil. But then, yeah, you get three mini moons after that. So, yay, great, and it's awesome.
Can I ask one question about it?
Go ahead.
Just one that's been bothering me. By chance, the background music, is it Pink Floyd?
No, it's not.
Oh.
Although the nice thing about the background music is it is a medley of all of the different stages that you've cleared so far.
Is it backwards?
No, it's not.
Oh.
So we move on to Eventide Island in Zelda Breath of the Wild. So this is another fun little spot. So Zelda Breath of the Wild is full of tiny little moments that are just amazing. It's great. But for me, the best moment in the game is definitely Eventide Island, and I'm sure plenty of people out there would agree. Eventide Island is an island, off the shores. You can't really just swim out there because it's super, super far. You can get out there with just a bunch of stamina refresh items, but if you're just trying to swim out there, it's gonna take you a while. I think it took me a combination of like flying and swimming or something. I can't remember. It took me a long time to get out there. Anyway, once you do get out there, a voice speaks to you and it says, "Hey, you up for a challenge?" I forget what the actual words are because I played it all the way back in March. So anyway, Eventide Island takes all of your stuff, all of it, all your armor, all your weapons, all your hearts. You are left with 3 hearts and no gear whatsoever. Except maybe a Korok leaf. I forget if you have one or if you have to find one. Anyway, you're basically naked, for all intents and purposes. And it's kind of like a microcosm of the game itself, because and you start the real game at 3 hearts, but yeah, you start at 3 hearts here, and there are enemies on the island, and you have a lot of trouble defeating them, especially the last one, which is a giant Minox. And the Minox is really incredibly strong, and it can kill you super quick. And of course, if you have the skills, I'm sure you can take it out. But you have to do this thing with different orbs. You have to put them in the right area. But to do so, one of them you're gonna have to defeat the Minox to be able to do it. The others just require a lot of knowledge of how Breath of the Wild systems work. So, being able to move things into place so you can fashion boats or walk on water kind of thing. So that's why I say it's kind of a little microcosm, because it teaches you how to do all this stuff if you didn't before. And if you knew how to do it, then it's kind of like teaching you, or it's kind of perfecting your skill with it. Yeah, you have to learn how to use your abilities to the best. And it's great. So, the last one I put on here is Breaking the Illusion in Prey. So this is kind of a spoiler, but at the same time, it happens within the first 10 minutes or so in the game. So, take that for what it's worth. Prey begins with you playing Morgan. You wake up in your fancy apartment. You got this beautiful skyline. You can go around, look at all the articles in your house, and it's kind of Bioshock-esque, and read the email on your computer saying, "Thanks for joining the company. You're gonna join us today." So you head up the elevator, and there's a helicopter waiting for you. And you get in the helicopter, and this is beautiful because it's the title sequence. Like, you can look out at the buildings that are surrounding the city, and they have like Bethesda Softworks presents, and it's kind of campy, but like there's this big synth music intro coming in, and it's like dun 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 as you're flying around the city, and it's a nice little feeling. You get to relax. You feel like the CEO of a big company, and then you go in. And you do a couple of tests, and the tests are pretty boring, but then something happens at the end that's not very boring, but you're knocked out. And you wake up, and it's the same day, and it's kind of weird. Like, it's like, "Hey, get ready for your first day at the company. We'll meet you at the helicopter." And you're like, "Wait, what?" So, but then you check your computer, and like, there's all these messages saying, "Get out now, get 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 out now." And you're like, "What, wait, 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 what's going on?" So you go out the door, and, there's this maintenance worker that was there yesterday doing some kind of repair work, but, she's dead. She's dead. And you can pick up her wrench. And the wrench is very important in the game. That's your primary melee weapon. Again, just like Bioshock. So, you can do a couple of things, but the main thing, like you're supposed to do, the elevator doesn't work. So you go back into your apartment, you take that wrench, and you smash through the window because you couldn't open the door before it was jammed. You smash through the window, and holy God, The apartment wasn't real. You were in some kind of simulated environment the whole time. And, yeah, you escape into, like, the control area. Yeah, it's kind of, I think it's revealed through the documents that you get that, you are Morgan Yu, but, like, you volunteered to be a test subject for these neuromods, and, when you use neuromods, like, your memory kind of gets wiped. So, yeah, your memory gets wiped from the previous day, basically. So, yeah, it's pretty interesting. So, our best moment out of all those. Best moment out of all those. I'm gonna say audition scene in Wolfenstein 2 is my strongest contender.
Considering I imagined everything you said and I was cracking up pretty hard the entire time. Yeah, it definitely beats the amusement park one.
Mm.
I'd say the only one out of all the ones that you listed that I thought was at the same level was the Romeo's and Juliet's. So, yeah, I'd say Wolfenstein definitely gets the top one, though.
Really? For number two, I would honestly say Eventide Island in Zelda, because just the mechanics of putting this island in there that is just so perfect at teaching you how to use the game's mechanics, by forcing you to get rid of all of your equipment and learning how to fight with the environment itself. Whether that be, you know, for example, when you're fighting the Minox, you can use, like, there's a boulder you can roll, or you can toss, pieces of metal underneath it, and then, like, lightning will come down and hit it and stuff like that. So that's honestly what would get my number two. Like, Romeo's and Juliet's is funny, like, I laughed, but I wouldn't say that's any better than this, because, like, it's just,
I guess, for me, like, yeah. The problem I'm having is, like, I didn't play the game right, so I mean, I enjoy the idea. I think that's, like, a really cool idea.
Mm.
But at the same time, it's really hard to kind of identify with the idea, because I haven't actually experienced it. Whereas, even though I didn't experience Wolfenstein, the fact that I can imagine all of that so easily, and I can, you know, I mean, obviously the speaker had a lot to do with it, but I feel like that one was strong in how much, like, raw imagination was brought forth.
I mean, I
just, it's hard to see it, I guess, for the Zelda ones.
Another thing that's important to remember here is that the best moment doesn't necessarily mean, like, best cutscene or anything like that. And, like, in Wolfenstein's case, it is a cutscene, but, like, it's supposed to be a moment that kind of stands out, that, like, this is a great moment in the game itself. Like,
okay.
So that's, I mean, Eventide Island is not a cutscene. Like, it's like a 2-hour thing where you have to do all this stuff, but, like, it's an amazing moment of gameplay, I think. Whereas, again, like I said, Romeo's and Juliet's, it's funny and it's one of my favorite moments in the game, but it's just like, okay, yeah, I laughed. I would
actually be willing to put the Prey one moment that you talked about a bit ahead of that, because it sounds to me, at least, very cerebral.
I like
that type of stuff. So
okay, I'd be fine with giving that number two. All right, so let's see. We have the audition scene in Wolfenstein 2 over Breaking the Illusion in Prey. Wins best moment. So our next one is the surprise of the year, which has a couple of entries. So we have Star Fox 2, Fast RMX, Resident Evil 7, Mario Plus Rabbids, and Doki Doki Literature Club. This is, well, Star Fox 2, it's weird. I've had a classic SNES now for a while, but I'm still stuck. Well, not stuck, but I'm playing other games besides Star Fox. Mostly because I'm afraid I've read bad reviews of it. But it is certainly a surprise that it got released. Fast RMX, I can't really comment on that. Chris put it on here and I haven't played it, so I don't know. Resident Evil 7, it's a complete redo of the series. A lot of people were kind of skeptical about it because first off, RE5 and 6 were just awful. They were action, not horror at all. And then people were looking at screenshots of 7, and it kind of felt more like a PT clone than anything else. So it was just jumping on that. But I think it stood by itself. It was all on its own. It was really good. It's a stunning title in VR. So I think that's pretty good. Mario plus Rabbids, again, this is one that no one really expected would work out because it just sounded crazy on the face of it. But then you actually start playing, and once people saw that it was Mario XCOM, it seemed to win a lot of votes over, or a lot of people over. Doki Doki Literature Club, this is one I haven't played either, but it's taking over the internet, basically. Everyone is talking about it. And so I think that is kind of a surprise in and of itself. Nobody heard of this game before it came out, obviously, but then it's out and it's free and people are playing it. And yeah, it's already on a lot of Game of the Year lists. And so, those are our entries. And just for like from zero to shock, I guess, personally, Star Fox 2 and Doki Doki Literature Club would be really in there. Resident Evil 7 would be another one, but yeah, the other two I mentioned probably more surprising than anything else.
For me, I knew nothing about Doki Doki Literature Club until it was memed to, hot heck and high and back, right? Like, that is just all the memes nowadays. I was really surprised at how well received a is it like is it fair to call it a visual novel? It's kind of a
Yes.
pseudo visual novel, isn't it?
No, I mean, it's still visual novel more than anything
Okay.
else. You don't, there's
So,
no other form of interaction.
right. So then I would say probably for me, in terms of shock, like everyone usually hates on the visual novels. They're like, it's that guilty pleasure you'll never admit to liking because, it's a visual novel. I would say the thing that really did shock me the most was actually Resident Evil not being terrible. I thought that was kind of amazing because the previous two Resident Evils have been at, the nicest thing I could say is they are games. Yeah, that's about as far as I'm willing to give either of those Resident Evils. So.
Okay, then let's say Doki Doki Literature Club gets number one here. And we'll give number two to Resident Evil 7.
I think that's fair.
Because Star Fox 2 hasn't really received good reviews. And so yeah, it's a surprise that it came out, but it's not a surprise in that it's a good game. All right. So let's see. Next up is the nuts and bolts system for the most interesting mechanic in a video game. Last year this went to World of Final Fantasy. For the stacking mechanic where different units could stack on top of each other or below each other and do different things. That actually reminds me, I haven't been talking about last year's winners for each of these, but that's fine. Best moment and surprise of the year last year went to Titanfall. Right. So again, nuts and bolts award for most interesting mechanic. We only have three nominees this year. I guess there weren't too many new mechanics or too many good mechanics, I guess. We had Cappy from Super Mario Odyssey. So you throw your hat and you become the frog. As the meme says, you throw your hat at the frog and you become the frog. Zelda's map system, which was indeed amazing. It was a very very good map. You could definitely see everything, and you could set custom markers, you could do that, standing on, well, you didn't have to stand on a tower, but you could stand on, like, an observation tower. You could look around with your scope. You could mark things, with a quick button press, and it would mark it on the map. And then you could customize the icons so that you could tell whether it was a shrine or anything else. And then the last thing I put was the corner gun from Get Even. The corner gun was one of the biggest saving graces of the actual gameplay in that game, because most of it was not that good. So anyway, the corner gun, it's exactly as it sounds. It's a gun that can see around corners. It was really amazing. It helped a lot with stealth gameplay, because you could sneak up to a corner and, just put out your gun, have it shift left or right, and, that way you could check if there were any guards, because there was a radar system attached to the gun itself, but you couldn't always tell exactly where people were looking. So, that helped out a lot. So those are the three things. I'm fine with giving this to Cappy over Zelda's map system. I just wanted to put the corner gun in there as an honorable mention. Unless you have any objections, Marcelo?
I don't. Actually, I was thinking like a Get Smart moment right there when you're talking about a corner gun. I'm like, for all of those people who watched 1970s spy comedies, there you go. There's your reference right there.
Well, the corner gun was also big in what was that movie with Angelina Jolie? Wanted. Wanted.
Yeah.
Where you could curve bullets. Yeah.
That's a movie.
Yeah.
Much like Resident Evil 5 and 6 were. Games,
yeah.
That is a movie.
Okay, so next up we're just busting through these now. This is great. Next up we had the Gotta Catch 'Em All Award for the best collectible item or most interesting method of collection. So last year this went to The Witness for all the different ways you could collect the different puzzles, including not just the puzzles themselves, but there were environmental puzzles, like you could look into the sky and match up clouds and make a puzzle out of those, and it wouldn't be another puzzle, or streams in the river, or lines in a tree, and all kinds of different things. It was great. So this year we have, again, just three. So these go to Zelda Shrines, Power Moons from Super Mario Odyssey, and the Kodama from Neo. I think this is going to be pretty straightforward again. But the Zelda shrines in Breath of the Wild were amazing. Some of them were very clear. They would just stand out on the top of the hill saying, "Dude, come over here. I'm a shrine. Get in me." And then you would go in them, and you would solve the puzzle, and you'd get a piece of a heart. So, pretty simple there. Others were more involved. There were shrine quests, so you had to do various things, like come at certain points of day, reflect sunlight in a certain area, bring a specific key item, do all kinds of different things. And, then the shrine would appear. And, so you also had a shrine radar that would help you find different areas, and it was pretty great. And it was also very interesting to go out and find them. I don't know how many I ended up getting, but certainly not all of them. Power Moons from Super Mario Odyssey, kind of the same thing. The whole game is about collecting these Power Moons. You have to collect them to go on to other worlds. Again, much like the shrines, some of them are just out in the open. They're like, "Hey, come on over, pick me up." And then others are hidden. Some of them are, some of them make use of the HD Rumble feature. So, those I actually don't like, because it means you have to run over to a specific area, and then, like, your controller will vibrate, and it's like, "Oh, dude, if I had never come here, I would have never known." right?
Oh, so it's kind of like a radar kind of thing, right?
Yeah, but again, only if you're like within 5 feet. And so,
That
yeah,
sounds really awful, to be totally honest.
No, I mean, those are like one to two per world, and there's many
Oh,
worlds,
okay.
but at the same time, like they did exist. Others were, just puzzles, like, oh, look, you caught a fish in this river, but if you catch the biggest fish, that'll give you a power moon. Or running a race, if you're the winner of the race, you get a power moon. So it involved a number of different kind of challenges, and that's pretty nice. The last one I said was Kodama, from Neo. This is Neo is again a Dark Souls style samurai game, but throughout the different levels, there were these little green, happy, shiny creatures called Kodama, and you could collect them and bring them back to your shrine, which is Neo's version of a Dark Souls bonfire. And if you gathered enough Kodama, then they would give you bonuses, whether it be extra attack power or a better chance to find health items. It was really nice because they were always pretty well hidden, but whenever you were close to one, they would always make this very bubbly kind of laugh. And you could hear them pretty clearly, so it was a reward for exploration, and I really like them, but I don't think they compare to Zelda Shrines of Power Moons. So I'm gonna say Zelda Shrines here gets number one, Power Moons number two.
No argument out of me. I played none of those games. So.
You gotta play Neo, man. You gotta play Neo.
I actually, my friends out in the States are like, dude, you got to play Neo. Same voices you're having with me right now. So
Right.
that'll probably be one of the next ones I play on the PC.
Okay, so last one, our last award for 2017, and it's already past midnight here, so it's New Year's Eve. But we have the Best Buds and Maybe More award for the best character relationships. Last year, this went to Firewatch for the I've forgotten their names, but the two characters, Henry, I think, is one. Anyway, yeah, so we have here the Wolfenstein 2 crew, Yakuza question mark.
That's
That's from Chris. I'm sure it's for Yakuza 0, and it's probably like Kiryu and Majima, but
Is Majima the one from Osaka?
he's yeah.
Okay.
Taihin yade? Yeah, that guy.
I like as soon as you hear that, yeah, that dude's from Osaka.
So I could easily see that, but I haven't played the game, so I can't comment. So we're gonna have to remove that since none of us have played it.
Pretty much.
Yeah, the next ones are Mario plus Cappy from Super Mario Odyssey. Cappy's kind of important to the entire game there. 2B plus 9S from Nier, excuse me, Nier, not Neo. Although that seems like a crossover just waiting to happen, right? Neo
That'd
and
be a
Nier.
great crossover, wouldn't it?
That's right. So, yeah, we've talked at length about these two characters. 2B and 9S, you play as 2B and 9S through different courses of the game. Yeah, they have a very intense relationship that Marcelo has only seen half of.
This is true.
Yeah. And last is the Nightwings from Pyre. So the Nightwings are your triumvirate, which is to say the group you gather to play the sporty sport that allows you to continue with the game. I think pretty much far and away this has to go to the Wolfenstein 2 crew, because there are so many amazing interactions in there, and we've only seen like a smidgen of it in our discussions here. But there Every character in there has an amazing personality, whether it be Sigrun, who is the kind of chubby, well, extremely chubby, ex-Nazi who joins your party, and eventually gets upset with everyone calling her a Nazi and starts beating the crap out of them for doing so until she gets the respect she deserves. Or it could be Max Haas, who only says his name like a Pokemon, but he says Max Haas, Max Haas, Max Haas. Well, he's got head trauma, so you know. But he's also got a deep soul and powerful intellect. Like it shows him beating the scientist at chess, and like he's the one that that designs like all of your helicopters and stuff. So yeah, there's all kinds of amazing characters in there, and like they work together really well, and they make like Ocean's 11 style kind of
Banter.
heist. Yeah, banter. Heist banter. Yeah. I'm gonna say that's number one, but number two I'm gonna give to 2B and 9S because their relationship is equally amazing and astounding,
Yes.
and that boy loves that girl. That's all I'm gonna
He
say.
does. He does.
Yeah.
I'm going to put it to you this time, man. Max Hoss.
Max Haas. Yep.
Max Hoss.
And
Oh, man.
yeah, I think that's gonna do it. I have been playing one game, but it's late, and I'll talk about it next week. So, right, that's gonna do it for us. You can follow us on our website at kaijupop.com. You can also see us on twitter.com/kaijupop or youtube.com/kaijupop, or you can follow us personally. I'm at Kyoshi Banzai.
And I'm Max Haas.
Yeah, Max Haas. We're all Max Haas. That's right.
On this blessed day, we are all Max Haas.
That's right. And that's gonna do it. Happy New Year, guys, and goodbye.
Bye.